Welcome back to Techonomics. I am your host, Jason Middleton. After 2 years of sharp elbows, circular logic, and lack of specifics, the presidential campaign left one resounding thing very clear. Jobs. Voters want a fairer shake at the American dream. Voters opted for the candidate dwelling most loudly on the creation of jobs for the middle class. The specifics of where exactly those jobs would come from did not follow the rhetoric, at least not yet. Now, the markets have been booming since Election Day, but here's a quick reminder that Wall Street is not the economy.
The prediction pre-election is if, you know, Trump won the presidency, the market would crash. Obviously, everybody who thought that was, you know, 180 degrees in the wrong direction. But there's a very positive atmosphere out there.
That said, if jobs are going to be created, the middle market is where we'll likely see the first economic pop. The middle market is the area where companies negotiate their mergers with and or their acquisitions of other companies. Now, it is likely that companies will expand their capital spending, reinvesting in their existing businesses. But that middle market, that's where the green shoots of growth will show the actual job creation. We grabbed an investment banker who specializes in the middle market, the M&A that gets cranked up as the economy begins to grow.
There is a lot of money out there available to buy companies, both strategically and from private equity firms, and now even family offices who will buy.
Here's my chat with that investment executive.
James Cassell. I'm chairman of Cassell Sal Peter.
What is the effect so far that you think or can predict, given the limited data you have in front of you regarding policy when it comes to jobs and hiring under President-elect Trump?
It's going to be very interesting because the president-elect throughout the campaign talked about creating millions of new jobs. What he didn't talk about is where that labor is going to come from. And if you then combine that with reduced immigration potentially and even sending some of the people who are here back, there's going to be a void, in my opinion, of available labor, both in terms of skills and just sheer numbers. And although we can look at unemployment and say there are a lot of people who are not looking for jobs as a result thereof are really not part of the unemployment number, I don't think there's enough there that's going to make up for what he claims he's going to be able to do. It's going to be a challenge.
Are one-offs like the carrier deal, are those enough to create a tailwind for the labor market?
Well, the carrier deal becomes expensive. It's one thing to do a one-off, and we've seen that around the country with regional areas trying to either bring people in from other areas living in Florida. We see the Florida giving incentives, but you can't cut a deal with everybody to keep them from sending employees. So that's an expensive deal. It's good for the people locally, and it's still not even clear what exactly or how many jobs will be saved by that. The numbers change depending on who you hear.
I kind of want to pivot a little bit, too, because there's been a lot of saber rattling when it comes to trade policy, talk of tariffs. How does that play out in the middle market, let's say?
Well, it's going to be interesting because when people, there's a whole slew of issues that are related here. One might be many companies that do manufacture here get many of their components offshore. So they may manufacture some here and bring some in. We don't know how that's going to really be affected by these proposed policies. A lot of As we sit here today, we don't know a lot of things. We know some stuff, but we don't know the specifics. So that's an issue.
I'm a little head scratchy on this one because if markets hate uncertainty, why are we in such a rally? Why are we at all-time highs on Wall Street? How does that look from an investment banker perspective? When you see the markets rallying like this, as an investment banker, how do you hedge? How do you position yourself?
We don't deal a lot with public companies in terms of, our firm, we're more M&A dealing with the middle market, which is the big job creator, in this country. I think what's happened post-election and the prediction pre-election is if, Trump won the presidency, the market would crash. Obviously, everybody who thought that was, 180 degrees in the wrong direction. But there's a very positive atmosphere out there, with consumers. It'll be interesting to see how the Christmas figures go in terms of, technology, what people are buying and spending their money on. There's just a positive feeling right now. And the economy, contrary to making America great again, again, America was pretty good before the election. And the economy over the last 5, 6, 7 years has really shown not fast growth, but steady growth. And the watermark was so low that it continues to grow. And the United States is the strong part of the world, much stronger than in Europe right now and in other, you know, parts of the country, South, you know, parts of the world, South America. So right now there's just a real positive attitude, which is driving the market. The other thing that's driving the market is with interest rates going up, people are liquidating where appropriate their fixed income investments, and they need to do something with that cash. People don't like to sit with cash on the side unless they think it's going to crash. We all know someday we're going to have a recession. We just don't know when. So, I mean, right now, I think what it's about is people are positive and they're hopeful. And then you throw in a lot of the people that we're hearing are going to be nominated for various positions in the cabinet. And that's also going to have an effect here because a lot of those people have espoused reducing regulations and making it more America a more business-friendly climate. Not to be confused with an environmentally negative climate, right, where some of the workers may not get the benefit that they hoped, but a more business-friendly climate.
We're speaking with James Cassell. He's chairman and co-founder of the investment banking firm Cassell, Saltpeter & Company. He's also an investment banking expert. And part of your expertise you just mentioned was M&A. So let's stick to your swing zone for this next question. What's the climate like right now for mergers and acquisitions, and where might we be headed under a Trump presidency?
You know, over the last quarter, third quarter of 2016, numbers were down. I don't see right now any increase. And I say they're down quarterly. Less deals are getting done. It's going to be interesting. If a company believes that we're going to be in a decent economy or a good economy for the next year or two, they may hold off on pulling the trigger on a sale. The flip side to that is with interest rates going up, their profits will start going down a little bit. But if they get growth, which is what everybody anticipates, growth in EBITDA, growth in continual business, they may hold it off a year or two. But it's a good market right now. There is a lot of money out there available to buy companies, both strategically and from private equity firms, and now even family offices who will buy. They're willing to pay good prices for that. So I think, and I am not in general an optimistic person, but I've got to tell you, I think 2017 is going to be a good year.
Speaking anecdotally, Mr. Cassell, what does a deal like Microsoft buying LinkedIn do to a market, to a sector, let's say? Does that encourage other companies to start considering this? Do they step on the gas when it comes to maybe they were already in negotiations and now they really want to close the deal? Does one thing get another, or are these kind of like one-off headlines, or are we looking at a trend?
No, they do. When you see these large deals happen, other people take a step back and say, wait a minute, if I don't do something now, am I going to be left alone? Do I need to partner with someone? So companies do in their boardroom, both large companies and medium companies, they have those discussions. What is this going to mean to me? What is it going to mean to the market? Sometimes being the first one that gets acquired is the only one that gets acquired, and then that behemoth or that bigger company then continues to grow. On the other hand, because of the frothiness of the market over the last few years, people want to do I want to stand alone? How am I going to grow? If you're not getting that organic growth which you hoped for, they have to do acquisitions. And then when we look at technology companies, it's a whole different area because technology changes so rapidly. If you don't keep changing and innovating, you're better off, selling, or if you don't think you can keep. I mean, there are many companies that wish they had done a deal a few years ago that ultimately are not the survivors. I mean, look at the difficulty of a BlackBerry, which was certainly the leader in its space and could have probably done many deals years ago, and now it's suffering on, a standalone basis. There's many companies like that.
Right, and BlackBerry specifically is pivoting to a higher margin software thing, but they may have pivoted a little bit late in the game, so I definitely take your point to heart on that one. Mr. Cassell, one of the things I get to do on this show that I really enjoy is something called a teachable moment, because I get to talk to smart people and ask them questions where I have ignorance. And one of my ignorance areas when it comes to investment banking, and this is definitely your swing zone, is fairness in issues in public and private offerings. So can you define for me what that looks like? What is fairness when it comes to investment banking?
I don't know, a teachable moment.
It could be a teachable moment for them.
This ends up being what's called a teachable moment.
what we do as investment bankers, in many public transactions, the companies will get what's called a fairness opinion. And a fairness opinion is ultimately analytical work done on behalf of either a committee of the board or the board of directors that they can use and rely on as part of their business judgment, because when a board makes or a committee makes a decision, they're using business judgment to look at analytical work and to be told by the investment bankers, in their opinion, that a transaction is fair from a financial point of view. Doesn't mean it's a good deal, doesn't mean a deal should be done, but when you look at the analytical work, which is look at comparable companies, look at comparable transactions, look at projections from a company based on a lot of information, ultimately what transpires is the bankers will then provide this information to the committee, and they'll use that as one of numerous things when they then determine that it's a deal they want to do at a price they want to do.
Mr. Cassell, this has been very instructive and informative, and I really do appreciate your time. I hope we can do it again maybe at the end of Q1.
Sounds great. Appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
That was James Cassell, chairman of Cassell Salpeter. His firm specializes in investment banking with expertise in mergers and acquisitions, often referred to as the middle market. For links to my chat with Mr. Cassell and all of our interviews and podcast segments, please check out KGORadio.com/Techonomics. We also have a presence on Facebook, Facebook.com/Techonomics Radio. That's where we also post the playlist to the music we use for each week's show. Coming up next, we have an expert in all things workplace. So you may have gotten through your office holiday party unscathed, but you still have that performance review coming up. We have some suggestions from Tom Gimbel on acing those reviews and getting that raise. All that and more soon. I'm Jason Middleton. This is Techonomics. Please come on back.